This is News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea. From Buddha bikinis to Christian skateboards, religion has become very big business in America. But commerce can play other roles in religion, too. Some groups believe business is actually a key part of their faith, and there are plenty of companies that make money helping people develop spiritually. For the next installment of our ongoing religion series, we look at the intersection of belief and business. Here to help are Asahed Muhammad. He's a member of the Nation of Islam and heads the Truth Establishment Institute, a research and publishing company in Chicago. Daniel Radosh is a journalist and author of the forthcoming book Rapture Ready, Adventures in the Strange Pop Culture of the Religious Right, and Carla Goldstein is director of external affairs for the Omega Institute, a spiritual retreat center in Rhinebeck, New York. She also heads Omega's Women's Institute. So welcome, folks.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Well, thank you for coming on. So, Daniel, let's start with you. You wrote about the religious commercial industry, but focused specifically on Christianity and on Bibles. How big is the Christian retail industry, and who's buying all of it?
Well, I can tell you, first of all, the religious retail industry in general is enormous and growing. The market research firm Packaged Facts estimates that next year Americans will spend $8.6 billion, with a B, on religious products. And that includes everything from books and Bibles to CDs to Ten Commandments neckties. Now, certainly the largest percentage of that is evangelical Christians. These products are sold through Christian bookstores and increasingly in mainstream stores as well.
Do you have any sense of how the African-American market is part of that? Because certainly there have been big events like MegaFest in the past that have really targeted the black Christian audience. Do you have any sense of how the black audience fits into the audience either for Christian products or products overall?
Well, it's interesting. There are, as you mentioned, a number of very high-profile and very successful people who have combined ministry and entertainment. People like Tyler Perry and T.D. Jakes come to mind. However, and certainly gospel music that sells very well. But most of that actually exists independently of the Christian pop culture industry, which is huge corporations which make millions of dollars selling books and CDs and so on. And within that industry, the African-American community is actually remarkably underserved. And I think this reflects the continued segregation of the church in America.
Well, I'm going to turn to you, Asahed. When you think about religion and marketing, first of all, does that description of what's going on turn you off? And how does it relate to your experiences in the nation?
Well, I think that what has to be understood is the difference between simply providing goods and services and obtaining monetary gain and being unethical in your business practices. If a religious organization or a church or a mosque or a synagogue is going to involve themselves in commerce, they should be representing the highest principles of that particular religion. And I think that in my personal experience, that is one of the reasons why I chose to start a business, because I wanted to demonstrate that aspect of faith in my everyday dealings, not in an overtly proselytizing way, but in a manner that shows that I actually live and attempt to practice and establish what I say I believe. Also, I think an important factor is that for any community, economics is the lifeblood, economics and business. And as America is very diverse, and as America has a large population of different immigrants from across the different nations, it's important to maintain that religious identity and allow them to keep some of their cultural business practices. And so I think in my experience and the experience of others that I've worked with, that's been very much in the forefront of our minds.
The nation has had a long history in black America and in America in general. How does it help and hurt you that the religion is controversial?
Well, you know, I think that depending on your level of understanding and what sources you're using to draw your opinions regarding the Nation of Islam, you will either think it's the best thing ever or the worst thing ever. I think that in most cases, if you interact with individuals or if people around the United States interact with individuals, they'll find people who are very much like themselves. And far from the characterization that sometimes is put forth in the media. By the same token, of course, there are some people who believe that controversy sells. And in the manner of in the way the United States is and with the internet, I think that controversy has helped because more people have decided to go straight to the source and bypass some of the controlled media outlets that might have a biased viewpoint of what the nation represents. So I guess it's a good thing and a bad thing, but as long as your motives are proper, then all things work for good.
Carlo, why don't you tell us a little bit about what you do? And I want to frame it in a specific context of religion versus spirituality. Is what you are doing and encouraging religion or spirituality? And describe it.
Sure. We refer to it really as spirituality, which encompasses, you know, there are differences and people can argue about what's religion and what's spirituality. But Omega is committed to offering a very, very diverse and broad range of access points for people to experience and learn about their divine nature and the interconnectedness of all people. And people come to that in very, very different ways. So for us at Omega, we're a nonprofit organization, which puts a little bit of a different spin on it, although we're still a business and we run a business, but we're not running the business for the purposes of making profit, which is true of many religious organizations and churches and mosques and synagogues. So for us, I think we're always in the wrestle between being authentic, living our values, and juggling the cost of that. You know, there's a premium right now in our society on values. So if you're going to buy food that is grown in a sustainable way, and you're going to buy energy that's good for the environment, and you're going to have a company culture that really respects everybody and gives them an opportunity to live a balanced life, these things cost a lot of money. And so juggling that is something that we find ourselves in a constant struggle about. And as an organization, you know, have a certain economic vulnerability.
Well, let me ask you one more thing before I go back to Daniel. Is it ever a problem to balance your business and your ethics?
Well, I think it's a constant struggle, and it's from a larger cultural perspective. To me, it's a really big question about whether we can shift all of our economies so that we are lining up our economics with our values. Because I think one of the things that was spoken about earlier in the show is how big this business is. And I think the business is big because we're all basically the same. We want to live good lives that are filled with love and connected to community, and we respect each other. And that's why people are searching and seeking out things that will help them do that. And the question is, can we have an economy that supports those values, and how do we line those things up? And I think there's a huge lack of alignment between our economic system and our capacity as a people to live true to the values that we aspire to.
Ashad, I'm going to turn back to you in a second, but first I want to go to Daniel. You're writing a book called Rapture Ready, Adventures in the Strange Pop Culture.
It's actually, I think you had the title slightly wrong. It's the subtitle is Adventures in the Parallel Universe of Christian Pop Culture.
We had it very wrong. Was this at least a earlier version of the subtitle?
Yes, it was at one point.
All right. Well, we'll blame your publishers for now because we love deflecting criticism. So what was that again? Rapture Ready,
Adventures in the Parallel Universe of Christian Pop Culture.
What do you mean by parallel universe?
Well, you know, it's like in one of those sci-fi movies where you enter into this world where everything feels very familiar on the surface, and yet once you start looking closely, there are these subtle differences that make all the difference. And that's what Christian pop culture is really like. It's a reflection of the broader American mainstream mass culture. The music, if you've ever been driving in a car and happen to flip past a Christian rock station, sounds almost exactly these days like what you would hear on any rock and roll station.
I'm thinking of Creed specifically, which is huge.
Sure. But in the parallel universe, the bands that are huge are ones that you have not heard of, that only get played on Christian radio and are still mostly sold in Christian bookstores. they also sound very much like the music you would hear anywhere else, except, you know, the joke is that instead of a girl's name, it's a love song to Jesus. And that's actually one reason, this may be a bit off on a tangent, but you were talking about how the black community is marketed to, and you will not hear very much Christian hip-hop. And I think that's an example of how the Christian pop culture industry overlooks the black church in America.
Well, I want to reintroduce everybody. In case you're just tuning in, this is NPR's News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea. This month, we're doing a religion series looking at everything from the art to the specificities to the business of religion. That's what we're talking about today. We're talking to Asahed Muhammad, member of the Nation of Islam, head of the Truth Establishment Institute. Also, Daniel Radosh, author of the forthcoming book Rapture Ready, and Carla Goldstein, director of external affairs for the Omega Institute, head of their Women's Institute. Asahed, I want to turn back to you. When you've listened to what other people have said about this issue of whether or not you can blend orthodoxy with marketing and who gets to hear your message, well, what do you think about what you do? Because the Nation of Islam runs its own businesses. You are not running one of their businesses specifically, but you're trying to bring their point of view into what you do. Is there a conflict?
Well, no, I don't think there's a conflict at all, because if you are truly trying to establish a business relationship with individuals and it's aimed at increasing or improving their quality of life, then in and of itself, you automatically have something that supersedes whatever profits that you may be attempting to generate. One of the things that I always try to do is provide adequate and professional goods and services to the individuals that we're trying to serve at an affordable price. And that is something that I've learned in my upbringing as a student of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan and through the teachings of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad in the Nation, is that it's not always about the money. There are times where the money won't be the emphasis, but the service that you provide will give you the satisfaction, and then you will receive the economic reward at the end. See, unfortunately, in the society that we live in here in the United States and really much of the Western world, it's capitalism. It's bottom line at all costs, no matter what. And so we sacrifice quality. We sacrifice and try to get things at the, cheaper quality goods and sell them for a high rate. It can't be capitalism and money at all costs if you're saying that you're trying to blend the religious and the spiritual. None of the prophets of God taught that.
Do you see yourself as one big golf course at any point? And what I mean by that is that in business, the golf course is seen as the place where you kind of go off to the side, you negotiate deals in private. Do you think that the fact that you're affiliated with a religion gives you that space to talk business, but in a different context?
Well, I think the important thing is I determine that. And I guess that in all of our individual and company business dealings, the degree to which we are living and practicing what we say that we believe, then that's the degree of our conflict. I'll give you a perfect example. We talk a lot about the newspapers in the black community. We have different newspapers. Of course, you know the Final Call is one of the largest and most widely distributed independent newspapers. But you will never see an article or a advertisement inside the Final Call which advocates rampant drug use or sex or 40 ounces of beer or anything of that nature. However, it is something that is popular, and people do donate and continue to support the Nation of Islam through that publication. So you can balance that, but the goal cannot be capitalism. You can't allow your religious beliefs to be compromised because of a corporate sponsor who may just be interested in getting their logo in front of a few faces. And that's a struggle that all of us fight. And I guess depending on your level of spirituality, you're either being successful or you're being defeated on a regular basis.
Carla, part of what you do is you work with volunteers to create an environment where people from different walks of life can come. How does your ethics fit into how you treat both the volunteers and people who may be paying for what you do?
Well, we often think of it almost that Omega Institute has two institutes. There's the program for the participants who are coming, and then there's an education program for the volunteers. And from the very beginning of Omega, which started 30 years ago, The goal was to create an intentional community and to have the volunteers have their own opportunity to grow and enrich their spiritual life and sort of develop, cultivate a service ethic so that when the participants come, they're coming into an environment where the people who are there are very deliberately trying to be in service so that everybody gets to experience what that's like, almost, you know, sort of outside our normal, everyday, transactional environment where there is a price on everything. Things are for a premium. You know, this person's being paid for that.
And, well, let me just jump in because we're just about out of time.
Okay.
Daniel, very briefly, where do you see this going? Where do you see the marketing of religion going and the idea that you can synthesize a connection between business or, you know, commerce and religion?
Well, the big shift in the Christian world has been that it has been discovered by the mainstream world, by the non-evangelical mainstream. And, the you know, as I said, 20 years ago, almost all Christian products would have been sold through Christian bookstores. Today, one-third are sold through Walmart and Barnes & Noble and Amazon.com, and Hollywood is making movies with the Christian audience in mind. So it's actually going to become more of a struggle because now that you have companies whose primary interest is profit trying to serve the same audience, I think there will be a lot of tension, but at the same time, there will be a lot more money.
Well, we're going to have to check back in on it. I want to thank you all for coming on. We were just talking to Daniel Radosh, journalist and author of the forthcoming book, Rapture Ready. He was in NPR's New York studios. A Shahid Mohammed, member of the Nation of Islam, heads the Truth Establishment Institute. And Carla Goldstein, director of external affairs for the Omega Institute, a spiritual retreat center in Rhinebeck, New York, also heads the Omega's Women's Institute.